When Alison Page won a Lego building competition at 12 years old, she knew she was destined to be a designer. Now she's just opened her first solo exhibition, Creative Shapeshifter. It's a look back at Alison's trailblazing career that spans almost three decades, has seen the Yuen Darawal woman inducted into the Design Institute of Australia Hall of Fame, and named this year's Robert Garland Tresidder Fellow at the University of Melbourne. To mark the start of Melbourne's Design Week and the opening of her exhibition, Alison joined me in the Away studio to dive headfirst into her creative practice and reflect on the ways in which Indigenous design was understood when she was first breaking into the design world with her colleagues.
What we were talking about then actually was about country, and that country was everywhere. Me being an urban Aboriginal woman from La Perouse in Sydney, Sydney South, where I grew up, you know, I'd always said I was a concrete Koori, you know, with a Westfield Dreaming, which I stole from Anita Heiss, who's an amazing author. But we were talking about how if you just dig below the city and all of those layers of the city, that there is country. And that actually what we know now, relating back to our ontology, our beliefs, everything we make and build is an extension of country. So we were at a very early stage of that conversation back in the late 90s. And of course, we were up against a very hedonistic time in design in general, where, you know, sustainability wasn't really on the radar, socially responsible design wasn't really on the radar. It's been an evolution since, really.
I wonder if you could talk a little more about how attitudes or thinking around Indigenous design have expanded and shifted to where we are today.
Look, design is never neutral. It's never neutral, and it's always within the context of what's going on in society. And I like to think that Indigenous design has kind of followed that sort of movement of where Australian identity is up to. So I think it has come a long way. In the last 30 years, we do have a very sophisticated industry that has, I think, quite world leading in terms of environmental design and environmentally sensitive design, water sensitive design within landscape, you know, lots of those things that are features of Indigenous design. But I think what's really wonderful about Aboriginal culture in general is that it's never just about our connection to nature. That is really important, and our connection to sustainability and caring for country is very important, of course. It's a central and foundational ingredient. But we're also talking about social justice and responsibility, not just for our own people, but for all people, for women in public spaces, for young girls in public spaces, for elderly people in public spaces, having agency, having those intergenerational spaces for learning and exchange. Also thinking about all of the activations that happen in public spaces and how they can be designed as well to foster a sense of community and social cohesion, which I think is really the next big offering in terms of Indigenous design.
Now, a lot of these ideas that you've been talking about are coming together, coalescing in an exhibition you've co-curated with Associate Professor Gillian Wallace. Where did the idea for an exhibition initially come from?
The genesis of the idea came from Gillian Wallace. Mm. So I just got a call out of the blue, and it's like, you know, how about a retrospective show just looking at your practice over the last 30 years? And it's been such an amazing experience for me, to be honest, because it's frightening, actually, how little I think we reflect on not just my practice and the projects and the vast amounts of projects that I've done. It's more the number of people I've collaborated with, the communities that I've collaborated with. I do, my work is very collaborative. So whether I am making architecture or doing, you know, a landscape or making jewellery or doing interiors or making a film, whatever the story is, you know, and I'm sort of, I guess, a storyteller at heart, you know, the amount of communities that I have sort of worked with to tell their stories of place and their stories of country is actually just so beautiful, and it's been such a joy. And I think that, you know, you cannot work in a space where you are co-designing with country without co-designing with the community.
I was thinking about, because this is your first solo exhibition, it's showcasing your work from furniture design to film, large-scale public works, and even electrical appliances that were part of your partnership with Breville.
There's nothing I won't design, really.
Well, I'm always kind of fascinated by the transformation that practical objects, whether they're woven baskets or a ceramic pot or even a toaster, undertake when they're brought into an exhibition space.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts?
What's been really great about this exhibition, and it's called Creative Shapeshifter because it's, and I've always felt really quite bad in my career about not really sticking to one thing and not really staying in my lane. But I kind of have realised now, I've got the maturity now, I think, in my 50s, where I sort of go, well, I don't have to apologise for that. I think it's actually a very Indigenous concept to be multi-art form and to actually be more of a servant to the story. It's really interesting looking at how we've always made objects from a traditional time to now, is that the artist, the maker, is almost a medium through which the ancestral beings speak. Mm. And so to be really open-minded about what medium that needs to be in to be true to the story. I've got a couple of works there about the 250th anniversary of Cook's arrival on the shores of Gamay, you know, where I'm from, at where the Lapu'is community live. I've made a major sculpture there that sits in the water called The Eyes of the Land and the Sea, and I've also made a film. So sometimes I think it's really good to sort of think about how multi art forms can be kind of brought to bear to kind of bring that story to life. Every story should have multiple interventions, and that really is what songlines are in a way. We never wrote anything with the written word, and so to actually embed our stories in the world around us, and that includes those everyday items that we have in our home, to wrap them in country, to wrap them in the library of the dreaming, is almost something that we should have the compulsion to really do, because we need to keep these stories alive, we need to record them, and we need ways in which they are uploaded and downloaded on a day-to-day basis. And design really offers this wonderful way of doing that. Every time you make a piece of toast, every time you make a cup of coffee, you are bringing that library of critical information to life.
This actually, it reminds me of something that you spoke about at Byron Writers Festival a few years ago. The challenge that people sometimes have with understanding the way an object is imbued with spirit. You spoke about people are capable of understanding and are willing to recognize that a tree has spirit, maybe even a book as sort of the lineage of that tree and the way that it imbues knowledge, but then really struggle when it's a rock or when it's something that is much more like functional and man-made. Like I referenced the toaster, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, inanimate objects. And it's really interesting. There is a whole philosophy around this. There's a book I read when I was at uni called Blackfoot Physics. But the genesis of that is, you know, and there's many speakers about this. Blackfoot philosophy is around how closely related quantum physics is with Indigenous spirituality.
Mm.
And you can sort of, I have gone into a rabbit hole reading about all of this because I find it fascinating. But just to say that, you know, if we can accept that Aboriginal people embed stories in the land, and as they walk through country over time, they are recalling those stories through song, through dance, through oral histories, by painting on their bodies, painting on cave walls, etching, carving these sort of knowledges into the world around them, because that is their way of remembering and recording this knowledge, because we didn't write books. So when you are making the object and you are recalling those songs, recalling those stories, you know, and this is quite often why in some Western Desert communities you'll often see artists singing as they're painting. Mm. They sort of go into a bit of a meditation while they're working. Or if they are painting maps, for instance, they'll be travelling that country in their minds. And I guess this is where the spirit of the object is imbued, and it becomes more than just remembering. It becomes a ceremonial object. And I think in the Western context, I mean, we can accept that people have family heirlooms or that there are objects that are special in some way, you know.
Mm.
Well, family heirlooms is a good touch point because we know that if you have an object in your home that was much loved or cherished by your loved one, that it almost becomes them.
Mm-hmm.
So in this way it becomes animate. It has spirit. And this is an idea that is very central to our way of life. And when we talk about materiality, when we make the object from country, you know, we had all of these protocols around going to the tree and talking to the tree and asking for the tree's permission to harvest from it, because it itself could also be either the ribs of an ancestral being or a body part related to one of our ancestral beings. And so it's at the very opposite end, I think, to this throwaway society of just objects from ordered online or the fast-paced sort of
consumerism
kind of that we have, yes. And this idea that, okay, what about if we made objects that had meaning? And I think this is the great cultural inheritance for all Australians, and especially for Australian design, is to kind of think about story as a life force and to think about story having multiple levels of depth. We all accept, and I think the whole world accepts, that Aboriginal art is very beautiful. It's aesthetically just beautiful, right? Just from a pure design perspective, it ticks a lot of boxes. But then when you actually start to realise the depth of knowledges and experience and spirit behind those works, then I think you can start to see then it's not just about paintings on canvas. It's absolutely everything, every surface, including country,
mm.
you know, has that level of depth in its relationship with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Alison, I want to bring us back to your exhibition for a moment. I would imagine that a lot of thought has gone into the actual design and flow of this show. What are some of the considerations you've been thinking about?
There's two very distinct parts to this exhibition that kind of all work into one. It's probably a reflection of the two parts of my brain, to be completely honest with you. One is quite didactic in the sense that it really starts at, you know, the very beginning of my life. Like, there's an early drawing there of a house that I drew when I was probably 4 years old. So it goes through into those early Merrimah days, and that sort of part of the exhibition just looks at time. And just this morning I've been mapping underneath that some of the big moments in the Aboriginal social justice movement.
Mm.
Even, you know, the tent embassy before, just 2 years before I was born in 72, being put in Canberra, to the protests in the bicentenary in 88, the Redfern speech, the Mabo decision, the Wick decision, like the Cronulla riots, the Howard years, the history wars, you know, the failed referendum, the Uluru Statement from the Heart. So, like, going around and kind of mapping the projects that I have done in thinking about what was going on in Australia at the time, because design is never neutral. So it's always in a response to where Australia is at. And so I truly believe it can be an act of power and can actually steer some of these conversations in the right direction. So in saying that, you look at what is going on politically in Australia right now, that design better get ready, roll up its sleeves and start responding in a strong way, right?
Mm.
So that's one part of the exhibition. There's another part of the exhibition which I'm calling the House of Black Studio. And this is sort of an idea that I have. It's kind of like my ideal studio, the studio I've always wanted. It's kind of got a lot of my samples, a lot of the working. So where you've just seen all of the finished projects and the films and so on and so forth, you go into this studio, and this is the kind of the messy part of my brain. But it's so wonderful because, you know, it's so interesting to people. And also House of Black is an idea that I'm really wanting to pursue now, which is creating a collective of Australian artists and designers moving into creating everyday objects with meaning and doing interiors with a lot of handmade elements to them. I truly believe that Australian arts and crafts is about to have a moment. It's probably my only way I can kind of really react against AI and generative AI, which I'm sort of pretty against. I think that that will bring authenticity and the human-made elements will finally sort of have its time to shine. And, you know, I've wanted to do this type of thing, custom design and interiors, ever since I started 30 years ago. But it's actually now that we've suddenly got a lot of little manufacturers that are boutique manufacturers in Australia that are starting to pop their heads up, but that these elements can go into major developments.
That was creative powerhouse Alison Page. She was speaking with me about her passion for authentic First Nations design, which is a key theme in her solo exhibition, Creative Shapeshifter. You can see it for yourself at the University of Melbourne as part of Melbourne Design Week. For more information, visit Melbourne Design Week's official website, designweek.melbourne. I'll also pop a link to it on Away's show page. I'm Rudy Bremer, here with you on Away for Radio National.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.